From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where Michelle discusses the issues of the day with The Conversation's politics team.
Hi, my name's Amanda Dunn. I'm the Politics and Society Editor for The Conversation, and I'm speaking with Michelle Grattan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Amanda.
Michelle, we're not expecting an election until the first half of next year, but Prime Minister is already on the hustings, it seems. This week he's been visiting the Hunter region in New South Wales. Why there and why now?
I think having come back from overseas from what was not a great trip on any measure, he wants to now start to consolidate his position domestically. He wants to sell the climate policy and he wants to start to travel. Of course, he's been shut up for much of the year. He's had to quarantine a lot. Also, there've been border closures, and normally he would have been spending quite a lot of time out around the country in various states, particular electorates, spreading his message. Now, that work on the ground is always important. It hasn't been done, and now he's beginning to do it. He's in Melbourne today. He was in Newcastle yesterday. Incidentally, just on election timing, a few people thought, a few commentators argued that there would be an election this year. I think that was never on the cards. But now, I think today, we passed the last opportunity for such an election. So that speculation is now put to bed, finally, for what it was worth, which wasn't much. Now, we're talking about March or May. The fashionable talk in government circles is May with an April budget. But, of course, March is not ruled out.
And, of course, it has to be done by May, doesn't it?
That's right. Late-ish May is the last time.
Okay, and meanwhile, Scott Morrison also seems to have changed his tune a little bit on electric vehicles. They've just announced another $178 million of investment to encourage low-emission vehicles. How does this compare with Labor's policy, Michelle?
Labor's policy is a more active one in that it would give certain tax concessions to make vehicles cheaper, non-luxury electric vehicles. It's modest, but nevertheless, it's more pointed than the government's policy. The government is talking about investments to encourage infrastructure, electric vehicle infrastructure, charging and the like, and also to make sure that infrastructure is integrated properly with the grid so you don't get outages and other problems. And there are a couple of other things. But it's more important in a way for what it doesn't do, because a number of experts in this area say that you need subsidies to really push along the transition to electric vehicles to bring down the price for ordinary consumers. And the government doesn't want to do that. It admits that in its consultation process, the feedback was that there was a call for subsidies. It says this is not the most efficient use of taxpayers' money. It also is putting a lot of emphasis on the fact that its policy is one of choice, that it's not telling consumers what to do. Now, the Labor policy, of course, at the last election was absolutely demonised by the government. That policy had an ambitious target for 2030, a 50% target for new sales to be of electric vehicles. The government at the time really went all out against the Labor policy. For example, Scott Morrison said that it would end the weekend, and he also said that people who lived in apartment blocks would have to run an extension cord down from a fourth floor window to charge their vehicles. It was a ridiculous campaign. campaign. And today, when Scott Morrison was announcing the policy, these quotes actually came back to haunt him because the journalists had them there and they said, well, what about what you said last time? He maintained he wasn't against electric vehicles at the last election, but just against the Labor policy. But in campaigning terms, that was really a distinction without a difference. So his words have, in this case, come back to haunt him, which is rather interesting when, of course, we've had all this discussion about whether he's loose with the truth and whether he can be trusted.
This week, the IBAC in Victoria, the anti-corruption body, has heard more about branch stacking in the Victorian Labor Party. And, of course, we've been hearing from ICAC, the New South Wales version, for some weeks now. Then there have been fresh allegations this week aired in 60 Minutes and in the Nine papers about the misuse of taxpayer funds, this time involving Federal Liberal Minister Michael Sukkar. Where does all of this leave us, and will we ever get a federal anti-corruption body, something we seem to have been talking about for a very long time, but it never seems to actually materialise?
Well, firstly, on the allegations against Michael Sukkar, you'll recall that some time ago there were allegations against him and also Kevin Andrews. The crux of this was that staff in electorate offices were doing factional work when they shouldn't be. They should be doing work on taxpayers' dollars, that is taxpayer work, as it were, helping the member in his or her electorate work. The allegations that have now come out as a result of documents in a defamation case do reinforce the argument that not all seems to have been well, and that a finance department inquiry into the previous allegations, which didn't find sufficient evidence against anybody, was perhaps not adequate, and that this whole matter should be revisited. Now, of course, Michael Sukkar, who's a factional boss in Victoria, has denied the fresh allegations, but I think that there is material there that should be looked at. The Prime Minister yesterday said, oh, well, all this was examined at the time. In other words, nothing to see here. He, I think, will try to maintain this line, but there is something, in fact, that should be looked at. On the broader question of a federal anti-corruption body, the government is committed to introducing legislation this year. Scott Morrison again this week repeated it wouldn't be like the New South Wales ICAC. In other words, it'll be a very weak model, which has already been under a lot of criticism. So even if the government makes some changes in its final model in the legislation, it's not going to have too many sharp teeth. And of course, that legislation would have very little time to be considered even before a May election. Pauline Hanson this week said she was now against an anti-corruption federal body. She was for it only a few weeks ago, but she says she's been influenced by what she's seen happen to Gladys Berejiklian, and therefore, even if there was enough time to consider the legislation through the Senate before the election, which is unlikely, it does look as though it would be struggling to be passed unless Labor supported it, and Labor would see it as very weak. So that would be problematic too. So in answer to the question, are we likely to get an anti-corruption body before the election? I think probably not.
All right. Great to talk with you as always, Michelle. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Amanda.
Our theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.